Welcome to the Linux Slugcast, episode 122. We are an open podcast slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you would like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device and join us in the, go to linuxslugcast.com for the server details and join us in the Linux Slugcast room. If you do not want to participate and just listen to the show, you can join us in our, we have a listening booth inside of our channel on the Mumble server. So you can just sit there and just listen. Kind of winging this one. If you need any help configuring your Mumble client, there is a how-to on the site explaining how to configure the desktop client. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can email us at feedback@linuxslugcast.com. And for now, which by the time, soon enough, there will no longer be a G+ community, but we do have a MeWe site. Or channel, or I don't know, what does MeWe call their things? No one? All right. You can also check us out on IRC on Freenode, #LinuxSlugcast. I am your host, Honky Magoo. With us tonight is 5150.
Howdy, folks.
Netminer.
Hello, friends.
And Joe is listening in, so he might pop in later, he might not. So we have no feedback from the previous weeks, so I guess we can go straight into topics. So I had a couple of links I put in there. So one of the first ones was, hold on, let me bring it up. So it is a another Android application that lets you run Linux. Either you can run a straight-up Linux distro or a specific Linux application. It's called UserLand. So let me give the brief description in here. UserLand is a free open-source tool that enables you to install and manage Linux applications on your Android device like you would a native app, and to also run full Linux distributions. You know, like Ubuntu, Kali, Linux, Debian. All the need to root your device. I'm not sure if that means it needs root. I don't know. That's the way it's in the description. It has an inbuilt terminal for connecting to shells, and you can connect to it via VNC sessions if you want a graphical experience. That was poorly worded. So the thing that I found interesting about this was so that you can use it as to basically, there's a lot of them out there. They seem to be, you can just run like a version of Linux or like a version of Debian on your phone and then, or just like a Linux terminal. But this seems to have the capability of just installing like a single Linux application. So if there's one Linux application that you just want to run on your phone and not just run like a full Linux operating system on your phone, it'll just install that Linux application. So I haven't had a chance to play with it. I'm not sure how much space I have on my phone, so I haven't installed it yet. I just figured I'd bring it here because I thought that was pretty cool that like if there was one application that I really wanted to have with me mobily, I can install it that way.
Yeah, I'll put the link in. Not exactly the same thing, but I know Joe brought this to on Wednesday to Tilts, a way to install full blown Linux on a Chromebook, and one of the options is to install it next to Chrome OS, not to override it. I mean, there's an option that if you want to install it from an SD card, then it overwrites the whole thing. But there's also another option to get to like a command line and install it. And then every time you reboot the Chromebook, you can, you know, either boot into the Ubuntu-based Linux or the Chrome OS, and that looked kind of cool to me.
So that would be different from like a crouton because crouton overwrites everything.
I don't. I think it's a and if Joe could jump in, he could probably explain it to us some more. But I know Joe at these hours he's subject to being on call, so he may not be able to. But it's probably on sort of on par with Crouton.
So, are you still using your Chromebook?
Yeah, and that's why I wouldn't want to override it because I'm also using Android apps like Hulu and whatnot. It's my living room computer to control my TV, essentially.
That makes sense, considering you're using the oh, now that opened my mouth, I blanked on the name of it. Google's version of like a Fire Stick.
Chromecast.
That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, so I would not want to lose the ability to communicate with the Chromecast, and I still don't know why. We've been talking about this for a year. I don't know why we don't have this ability in Linux to run Android apps. It's because they're just It's not because it can't be done. It's because they're not giving us the ability.
Right. And there are ways to do it, but they seem like kind of hit or miss.
Well, every time I've tried, I've done a lot of shows on trying that, and none of them have actually worked for me.
Or what you can do is install PrimeOS, my next link. PrimeOS is basically, it seems like a new take on RemixOS. Or I saw somebody explain it as so we've talked about how when you plug a Samsung phone into Dex, it was supposed to give you a sort of desktop Android experience. That's apparently what the what this sort of looks like. I actually downloaded it. I have it running on a US live on a USB stick right now, and that's what I'm looking at the show notes right now with. It's fine. It seems like a regular desktop thing. What I want to do is I want to play with it and see if I can run some Android games on it.
Cool. See, it seems like what we wanted for Remix OS before that, died.
So far, it seems to be running pretty well. I mean, like I said, the only thing I've done so far with it is boot it up live on the off of the USB and opened up the web browser, opened up Chrome, and I mean, I haven't installed any app, try to install any apps yet, but I mean, so far so good. And they have let me go to the download section. They have three different versions you can download. Go down to the download page and the help page, they explain so you have so the quick and dirty is the PrimeOS mainline 64-bit version is for newest systems 2014 and up. PrimeOS standard 64 version is for newer systems about 2011 up, and then they have PrimeOS Classic, which will actually run 32-bit.
So all this is on Intel hardware.
Correct. And as somebody who has run Android x86 before, this is leaps and bounds above that. And actually, I ran Remix OS on my Pine 64 at one point. And that ran about like this. I mean, I was using it to watch Netflix. I basically just had it for Netflix and AnChat for a while. And I don't remember what happened. Something was stopped working, I think. And then I just gave up.
Well, for those of us who got the old Remix tablet and quit getting updates, of course that's not Intel hardware. That's that's ARM, but maybe we cross our fingers and hope that somebody comes up with, a port or something that would work on, because the hardware is killer. It's just they quit doing any software updates.
Now, has that did you get well, I know you got the it wasn't the tablet, you had the little box, but did you get the tablet as well?
Yeah, I got the tablet, and both the first and second versions of the box. The main trouble with the tablet is, and I don't think I'm the only one, but never found a fix online. The Wi-Fi started to come and go on the tablet.
Oh, well, that stinks. I mean, if anything, if things like the browser still worked, and like we were just talking before the show about what type of things that because Netminer had a friend of his is giving him a tablet, what type of things you do with a tablet. I mean, a lot of it is just, if you can use Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, there's something to watch a video, as long as that still works, and regular web browsing, email, that type of a thing. But that all requires network connectivity. If the network connectivity on it is dying, then that just really stinks.
Yeah, there's not much it was good for without the Wi-Fi working. In fact, it just serendipitously about the time I gave up on the tablet is when I was gifted the Chromebook. So I would have had to have bought something, if I hadn't won the Chromebook in a raffle.
Now, I know you've probably talked about it before, but how well does your Chromebook work when it comes to like watching videos and stuff?
Well, it's an Intel Chromebook, so it's on the higher end, but most of the time, I toss it to the Chromecast, and it's kind of weird and strange because, when you throw it over the Chromecast, the local device becomes more of like a remote control. You can tell obviously once it goes to the Chromecast, then that becomes the device. So it's not like it comes through the Chromebook or the phone or whatever, and then it's broadcast to the Chromecast. It goes straight to the Chromecast, and you can see a lot of times the connection to the remote control will drop, and it's gotten better. I think they've done some work on the software so that you can get on the remote control and reestablish the connection. It used to be where once the connection between the Chromecast and the originating device dropped, it was like, it was going to play to the end of the video unless you turn the TV off, or kill power to the Chromecast, which would usually be the same thing because, the Chromecast plugs in the USB on the TV for power, so. You turn the TV off, then the Chromecast goes off. And then if you did that, then you'd have to start over. Most services will say, play from where you quit or whatever, but sometimes you'd have to go in and click on about where the last place was, and unfortunately have to watch the commercials immediately prior to that. Again.
Yeah, that's kind of why I never went for the Chromecast personally. But then again, I went for the Fire Sticks, and then because Fire and Google don't want to play nice together. If I ever want to watch anything on YouTube, I gotta use the Fire's workaround, which is I think it's a Firefox app that opens straight up into YouTube, something like that. What I should have done if I was smart is gone something like Roku, which is, agnostic, and you just install I could have just installed, the Prime app, YouTube app, and Netflix app right on that thing.
Yeah, that's kind of why I went with Chromecast. It seems to have the biggest coverage area. If you go with Roku or if you go with Amazon, there's going to be things you can't see.
Right.
And I do have Prime. Mainly I have Prime for the 2-day delivery, but once I got into it and saw, okay, I've got that. Then, I've got all these other things, and the TV and stuff. And again, I usually get into that once in the summer when the regular TV season is over.
Yeah, they got some halfway decent content.
Well, the expense is on there now, so. I'd almost do it for that.
Have you watched all the Expanse yet?
I have not watched the latest season yet. Well, first two seasons, I haven't watched season three, which is out there now, I guess.
That is just a fantastic show. If you like any sort of like sci-fi, I mean, I would highly recommend that show.
Oh yeah, I've never heard anybody say anything, Yeah, the Expanse isn't worth it. Don't get it. I did pay for the current season, and I've only watched like the first three episodes, but I did pay to get the current season of Doctor Who. We'll see how that goes.
Never got it much into Doctor Who. Kind of depressed that Netflix used to have, like, I believe most of the old back catalog that was before they restarted up recently, but they all those went away.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, no, any place but the United States, Netflix has the current Doctor Who, but it's like that for a lot of series, unfortunately. And there is stuff that on Netflix that is only in the United States. So anybody outside the country, if you're chiming in and saying, yeah, you know. We don't get to see this stuff with the Netflix license. Yeah, I feel you.
All right, so let's see, going down my list. All right, so I put a little command in there that I wound up doing. So last, if anyone remembers from the last show, I've been working on this old laptop of my mother's, trying to find a DOC file, a Word file. That she, well, they thought that there was some sort of an issue with the hard drive itself, so they just wound up, like, I don't know what they thought, but they wound up just completely wiping the hard drive and reinstalling the operating system on it. And I'm like, well, that file you were looking for or needed is probably still on there somewhere. Been spending some time trying to dig down in there and find it, but when I did PhotoRec and a search for anything that would be a Microsoft Office file, I came back with all sorts of stuff. So I've been rummaging through those, and what I've been doing to rummage through those is using grep, and then I would send, which I should probably put the grep command in here. But I would use grep to give me a list of files. Like, one of the names was like Leeds. The name of the document was originally like Leeds 2018. So it was, I would do a grep for the word Leeds, and just have it run through everything, and then take all the names of everything that it finds and put it into like a text file, and then I would run this command here. It's xargs-a, and then the file that I put all of the command the those that I put all of the names of the files that I had grepped to. CP to copy it, dash T, and then path to the destination of where I want to take all of these files to. Or you can do the same thing with obviously like an MV to move them if it's if I think this time around I wound up moving all of them just because some of the stuff it found was huge, huge files. So it was just easier to do it that way and then just keep on, you know, I did Leeds first and then I did 2018 out of everything I found from Leeds and I'm just trying to work my way down. And then I would use the I did for loop, which if you move down to which was my last one, I had to rename some files. So this was a link to that I found explaining all about renaming files, but it also explained on how to do a for loop for how to rename a bulk number of files. And it also went I put the link that I found in the show notes because I thought it the link did a nice job at trying to break down and explain what a for loop is and how it's you know useful it is for something like this, because that's the same for loop that I had used a couple episodes back for doing for when I had to convert all of the audio files from the New Year's Eve show to from I you know I forget what the name of that format was that it was before to WAV files. I had it explains that how to use that for loop for doing things like that on the command line. I'm not going to read it all out here, but check out the link in the show notes. It does a very good job of explaining how to do like if you want to do something like that, it gives a good explanation of how to do it. And lastly, so anybody who and the thing's now gonna open up an ad. Anybody who has Raspbian and did an update recently, apparently there was something in the update that basically just kind of completely crashed Raspbian. So there are fixes for it. You know, unfortunately, it requires you to remove the SD card from your Raspberry Pi, go in and delete a file. One is etc slash ld dot so dot preload preload. And that should just fix what the problem is. Yeah, so there are some people who were pretty upset about it, but I think that those people just don't really understand. I mean, there are people who wanted to like that, like, well, this is fine if you can get at the Raspberry Pi, but you know, if you have a remote Raspberry Pi, there you should have some sort of a backup system to that, anyways. But so if you are the ones who had your don't, you know, had your Raspbian crash on you. Don't despair. It's an easy fix. Check out the link in the show notes. Like I said, it's just you put it in there, delete that file, and you're right back up. And plus, they the people who do Raspbian, they obviously know about the error and they've had it fixed in the newer versions. And that is all I have this week.
Yeah, I admit to do some stuff in the last couple of weeks and still only have links. I tried to put Diet Pi on my Pinebook or not Pinebook Pine 64 that I've had laying around because it's still probably my most powerful arm device since I haven't bought any lately. And want to set up some stuff like pie hole and blanking on stuff, local servers I want to set up. But I guess I grabbed the wrong image and put it on the SD, because started up yesterday and it said, yeah, this image is so old it can no longer be updated, which is kind of strange, because I think DietPie is based on Raspbian. You would think at any point you could do an update. So, what I downloaded was only a couple weeks old, so I must have just moved the wrong image over to the SD card. So that's my big fail. Speaking of big fail, we got in this kind of last show about people in power not understanding technology. And apparently Elizabeth Warren wants to break up Facebook and Google and a bunch of the other big technology companies.
Wants to break them up, how?
Well, I guess, I remember back in the 70s when they said AT&T is too big, we need to break it up. And eventually they did that, and then Southwestern Bell, was the only one that survived, and then bought all the other parts and renamed itself AT&T. But I mean, it's like, the revenue stream of Google is still the search engine. So if you break if you and everything else that they do, Gmail, and of course G Plus is going away. Everything else feeds into the search engine as a revenue stream. So if you break up Google, then those other parts are not going to have any source of revenue unless they, unless they sell information to the search engine part.
So what is her reasoning for this? They're just too big.
Well, probably having no idea what she's talking about, and not being political, because I don't think politicians on either side of the aisle know what they're talking about when they talk about technology. But and Amazon's also on her list. I don't know how that gets broken up, but just, yeah, they're too big, they know too much about us, and well, Facebook's been in the news quite a bit in the last few in the last year as far as sharing information. So it's, probably to politicians, it sounds like, yeah, they're too big, let's break them up. And that's not knowing anything about what they're talking about. But that's going to sound good to voters who also don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I don't see that working out. Now she's running for president in 2 years, isn't she?
Yeah, I think this is her first policy proposal. If she becomes president, then she'll break up all the big tech companies.
I would have chosen something else.
Yeah, I mean, I am not saying these tech companies don't have a whole lot of power and influence. It's just, it's like when the Europeans tried to break up Microsoft years ago. It's like, okay, how do you go about that? Because even at that time, they were practically giving the operating system away for free, just to get that toehold. But it's not like you're going to break them up and say, yeah, there's going to be this one company that makes the operating system, and there's going to be another company that makes Office.
Plus, didn't Google do something like that where they have, oh Lordy, what are the two different parts of Google? Alphabet and
And that might have been Google seeing the handwriting on the wall and saying, "Oh yeah, we'll pretend to diversify into different companies." But I mean, Facebook makes its money by selling your information to other people. How do you break up Facebook into different parts?
yeah, it's kind of one thing, isn't
I mean, somebody could say, yeah, it'd be real easy to break up Google into different services, but it's only the search engine that makes the money. So how do you do that?
Hey guys, sorry I missed most of the show.
That's okay.
Hey, Joe.
Work sucks.
Yep.
And Amazon's also on our hit list. I mean, the whole thing about Amazon is you go there and you buy stuff. How do you break that up?
Well, you also have AWS, you have their Prime Videos, music.
You also break it up into different services. Okay, so have Amazon the bookstore again, and then have Amazon that sells all the other crap, or Amazon that sells fresh food.
Right.
I guess you could do that and pro. And probably if you separate, we were talking about, I've got the Prime Video service. If you separated that out from the 2 day shipping, I'm not, unless you cut the price down, I probably would not pay for two different things.
Right. Is there what there's there's supposed to be coming out of a way where you basically just pay for the 2 day shipping, but I thought.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that.
I may be wrong.
Don't worry, that one will be $99 as well.
Right. Well, they just hiked up the Prime membership, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it's 112 right now, but don't quote me.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, we talked about it. Just added stars to my Hulu thing. So probably the worst thing you do right now is add up all the monthly fee stuff with DC and Hulu and Amazon and show me the total of the bill. It's probably worse than when I was in town paying for cable.
Yeah, and that does suck, but at least you're just paying for the things that you actually want instead of a bundle package with a bunch of crap.
That's true. When I had cable, it was, 105 channels, which five of them I probably watched.
See, the problem is the way they get you is it's like $90 a month for just the internet, and then it's maybe like $20 more, $20, $30 more for adding the television and everything else. And then it's like, I don't know, they'll give you other packages where they'll throw in the phone service or something like that for like another $10 a month or something. And it's almost not worth it to, no, I don't do the phone service, but it's almost not worth it to get rid of the television because it's the amount you're actually paying for the television is very small versus what you're paying for the internet.
Yeah, I wasn't there in town long enough to get rolled over. Okay, we've got you for the year, and now everything's back to full price. But it was like Showtime and HBO for $15 a month. Well, yeah, sure, fine. Whereas if I'd gone, if I'd been in town the full year, it'd be okay. Yeah, we got you now. Now it's $75 a month. Okay, I went back to the show, not show notes, but the chat for Tilts. It wasn't Joe. It was Starship Tux who talked about putting Gallium OS on his Chromebook. That was the full Linux install that you could put on. Okay, and the other things I found in my my links for the show. I really hate to quote Kim Komando because I don't think she knows much about computers. But link on her show about now Google Maps will show you the speed limit on whatever highway that you're on. Though they've always thrown that, I think, into the their how you know how
Ways.
long it takes you to go from one route versus another route, because sometimes they'll show you a longer route, but it's faster because the speed limit is higher.
Right, but you never saw the speed limit for whichever road you were on while you were driving on it, and now you do.
Right. Of course, what I'm afraid of, what they'll eventually do, they'll put the they'll send that into the computer in your car where you actually can't drive any faster than what the speed limit is. And if you don't have a car new enough to have the computer and all that, they well, you can't drive that car. You have to have a new car.
I don't think they'll do that because they're not always accurate on the speed limits because speed limits change.
And I guess it shows up on the bottom left corner of the map now.
Yeah, I've actually seen that recently.
Now, I guess one thing could be okay. It says also drivers will be flagged the location of speed cameras.
I don't think we have any speed cameras up here in the north.
Yeah, I don't think so. Think I usually do either, but yeah, I guess that could be. If you're following the map or whatever, have some kind of beeping warning go off. Yeah, you're about to go through an electronic speed trap.
I'd kind of be surprised if Google did that. Now in Kansas,
Well,
do they have those giant things painted on the ground saying that speed limits enforced by aircraft?
I don't see that in the article, but does say that if you drive through a speed trap, you can actually add that to Google Maps. Say, hey, here there be speed trap.
Do they have the speed limit enforced by planes or whatever in Kansas?
I've never seen it. I know the Highway Patrol does have aircraft, but I've never known them to be used for speed enforcement.
It's not painted on the highway anywhere.
Not that I've seen.
Have you ever seen that before in your travels?
Have.
Yeah, I don't think I have. Now, the one thing I would like to see, I've never run across it, is the big arrows that concrete arrows that used to be there for the airmail service, like in the 20s.
Just by your brief description, I would like to see that as well. Arrows for airmail in the 20s.
Yeah, and I've never run across one of those. There's got to be some in Kansas somewhere, though. I mean, I just found out there is a quote dinosaur museum here fairly local because of the high winds in the last few days blew one of the dinosaurs over. But apparently, well, it's up close to Wichita. At Derby, there is a museum with a bunch of big outdoor, fiberglass dinosaurs or whatever that I never knew about. And it's like, well, yeah, I want to go see that soon.
That sounds pretty cool. So on a quick search, there's one in, is it Lyon? Lyon County, Kansas. And there's one in Osage, Osage County, Kansas.
Osage.
Osage. Let me see if I can put this link in the show notes here. Not Linux related, but it is in the show notes.
I was going to say that maybe one of our more interesting non-sequitur links. Thank you. And apparently the official name for these are beacon stations. And yeah, stuff I didn't know. They apparently originally they had like a rotating beacon light. You know, I always thought, well, they were just put there, and unless you weren't too far off course, you would overfly. I mean, what these were arrows for their mail route, and, you know, long before GPS or whatever, their mail pilots would fly over these arrows to know if they were still on course or what course they should be flying on. But I guess originally they had a beacon to, you know, if they were off course, you know, the airmail pilots could fly to that point and then see the big arrow and see where they should be headed. And, you know, a lot of places had power, but some places didn't. And the places that didn't have power actually had a generator, you know, to run the beacon light. Yeah, the one in Lyons would be closest to me, but look at the pictures online. You'd have to know what it was to tell anything.
Right? It just looks like a bunch of rocks. They didn't take very good care of that.
Well, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, they weren't thinking, yeah, people are going to want to come visit this in a hundred years. We by the 30s or 40s or whatever, when they had radios and planes and, you know, that, you know, these things were no longer needed. Nobody thought, yeah, let's preserve this because people are going to think it's cool in 100 years.
That's true. Though looking at some of them, somebody thought of that.
And the last thing I had, the link has been in my list for a while, and I just never put it in the show. But it's like USB stick that's a router, and you know, obviously. It's very much hackable or whatever, you know, with Linux. And so, you know, it's a Hackaday link, but a lot of things you could use this for just as a router. I mean, yeah, you're probably not going to do your whole network off of it, but, you know, might be an interesting thing to play with mobile and plug it into a laptop.
What company is that?
The name on it is MicroRouter. Give me a second. GL-USB150. Let's see. And the link, of course, and Hackaday, you know, is how to use it for pen testing. Okay, diving deep enough, I found the Amazon link, so I'll put that in the show notes. This is one of those things, if I was smart enough, I could probably come up with all kinds of uses for it.
A separate network that is always connected to VPN.
$30, not bad. And it's got a coupon for 10% off.
Yeah, I mean, low power computers, you could probably run your OS on this thing and speed the PC up.
Is that everything you have tonight?
Yeah, that's everything I had. This article, one thing said, you go to your customer, or whatever, and just plug this thing in, and suddenly you have a Linux box on their network all the time, which really would save me a lot of trouble. A lot of times, say, something's not right on the network, and just be able to remote in and get into a box without, the customer having to do anything and say, yeah, okay, yeah, I do this, this, and this, and we're done. Joe would probably like that.
Sounds like a good thing. That makes me think. I mean, I know my brother has a lot of problems with his server, and I have trouble getting onto his network sometimes because of it. So if I sent him an image for a Raspberry Pi and had him put it on an SD card and put it into one of the Raspberry Pis that he has, then I would have access to his network all the time.
Yep. How many Raspberry Pis does he have?
Oh, he picked up a couple from one of the jobs that he was on with, where he was making automated mailboxes.
I was about to say, most people on Raspberry Pis could probably fix their own problems.
Evidently not him.
All right. So do we have anything else for tonight?
Just this beer.
Anything good?
Not really. It's Michelob Ultra.
But it's a beer all the same.
All right. You say so.
At least it's low carb.
If you say so. Yeah, I'm sitting here with 2 cups of tea. So I'd prefer even Michelob Ultra right now.
Yeah, it's only got 2.6 grams of carbs.
Well, there you go. Is that why you got it that? Because it was low in carbs, or?
Yeah, that's why I picked this instead of one of the better beers in my fridge.
Gotcha. Our next recording date will be April 5th, 2019. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server and for the bot module. To find the next recording date, all you have to do is go into our Freenode server, our Freenode channel, and type .ns in the channel, and it will tell you. We'd also like to thank 000 Web Hosting for our free web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Kay Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bemis for all of their help over the years. I have been your host for the evening, Hunky Magoo. With me tonight has been 5150.
So long, folks.
Joe.
Good night, all.
And Netminer.
Good night, friends. See ya. See ya in a couple weeks.
Have a good night. Distro bashing?
Yeah, jumping from distro to distro on the same hardware.
Did you find anything good?
Well, I found some interesting things. I was checking out various things from the BSDs to some spins of OpenSUSE. And this on an old dog of a machine. And I found out that OpenSUSE should be labeled does not play well with others. Because every time it did an update, it would overwrite my carefully crafted grub configuration.
Well, that's not very nice at all.
And I found that on the single core, the BSDs, although I didn't try Trident on it, Didn't seem to really play nice either.
So what was your opinion of the BSDs? I've heard mixed things about it. I think those who are like hardcore BSD people are, you know, well, they're hardcore BSD people. I mean, but, you know, other people, when they're trying it out for the first time, seem to have a hard time with it. It's not as new user friendly as, let's say, a lot of Linux distros are.
Well, the only thing that kept me from trying Trident, which looks pretty good, that's the desktop TrueBSD community project, is that it's strictly ZFS. The machine I was on is both processor limited and memory limited, extremely memory limited. It's 2 gig machine.
Why does ZFS not play well with old hardware?
Classic ZFS wants gobs of memory, and then add gobs of memory, please.
I think there's something wrong if your file system wants gobs of memory.
Well, ZFS is not exactly a file system. It's somewhat of a religion. It has the characteristics, well, in the Linux world, it's ButterFS is copying as much of ZFS as they can. Lots of snapshots, lots of rollbacks, lots of big server related stuff. ZFS does RAD as part of the file system, not at controller level, but at file system level with dumb controllers. It's more of a meta file system than a traditional.
That sounds way too much than what I would ever need.
Well, on some of the BSDs, you have the UFS, the older unified file system, but the TrueSP based stuff is gone to strictly ZFS, which means you need a much higher caliber machine. And I'm running on this on a very crippled Semipron, a 1250LE. My thought is anything that will run on that will run a lot better on anything with reasonable modern specs.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I have two systems that I want to try. One is Bodhi Linux, and the other one is Zentau Server.
Well, I've always been a big fan of Bodhi Linux, and I got it running here on my smaller laptops.
Well, what I've been doing is booting various flavors once I found out of Ubuntu, lightweight Ubuntu's, on the machine, trying to figure out what, if there was any of the distros that were lighter or more performant.
That makes sense. Have you tried, if you're looking for a Ubuntu base, I take it you've probably tried Zubuntu and Lubuntu?
Well, I'm trying different flavors of Ubuntu. Also, I've looked at Lubuntu. And 1804 is the last old school light Lubuntu. It is jumping completely to Qt and LXQt as of 1810 plus.
I thought LXQt was still lightweight, though.
Yeah, well, it doesn't play well with X2Go, which is one of the things that I want to experiment with, unless I have a reasonable alternative.
Well, that's no good.
Well, I may actually make it my client-to-client remote desktop. And Zentall Server is Ubuntu-based, and it's a unified server architecture. Basically web configured, and the self-support version that they label experimental seems to have the minimum requirements of my machine. 64 bits, 2 gigs of main memory. Local administration is basically through Firefox running the web admin that you'd be running over the network. A full server is probably overkill for my real needs, but if I limit it to in-house only, it would allow me to have reasonably configured email, other stuff, so that I could experiment against it.
Are you going to run your own email server?
Well, yes and no. Again, this is going to be a local domain email server. The server is not going to be accessible from the web for most functions.
So, are you going to be running an email server, or are you going to be running like a webmail client?
I'm going to be running a server for experiments, including language stuff, where if I want to send mail, I will send it to my local server. If I want to experiment with implementing email clients, I'm going to do it to the server that is house limited. If I want to email you, I will use an outside email provider.
Ah, now I got you.
No, I'm not going to try to expose my email. I'm trying to get the training that I would need if I decide to do it down the road.
Gotcha.
You might call this the farm truck. What the kid learns on in the back 40, not what you drive to town. Zentall is a pretty good pre-configured Ubuntu server package. Where you don't have to necessarily configure everything by hand.
Does that have a web-based interface that helps you kind of install some of the your basic application, basic server type stuff, and do some server type monitoring?
Yeah, it does server type monitoring. It does. It can be anything from a firewall, DHCP, email, DNS. It can handle all of that.
Was that called ZenOS at one time?
I don't know what it was called back in the day. I've looked at some other stuff, including ClearOS, but even for my limited use, ClearOS requires you to sign up.
That's not cool.
That is, sign up before you run it.
Right.
Also, I am wary about even in my remote access, TeamViewer, and there's the Google has their own remote desktop stuff, but a lot of it relies on at least having links to the outside Googleverse or whatever.
Right. The one thing about like TeamViewer is that like, number one, you gotta obviously you have to trust TeamViewer, but on the other end, it's simplicity and ease of use. I mean, I could set up a TeamViewer on, you know, one of these machines, and then can connect to it from just about anywhere without opening up ports and the firewall and stuff like that, just because of the fact that it's bouncing it out and then back in.
Yeah, well, again, I've used it under Windows back in the day, and it's a nice thing, but I prefer to keep things inside the network.
Right.
A friend of mine is going to be dropping me an old laptop, a Windows 10 laptop, and a tablet.
Can you really call a Windows 10 laptop an old laptop?
Well, since my friend just picked up a new gaming laptop, it's sort of, and this one's about 7 years old. It originally was probably eight.
Core i7?
That's what the new laptop my friend has. This one's a second generation AMD APU.
How much RAM?
I think it's 64. The only point which may be a problem is it's got a hybrid drive in it, which may or may not still have some life in the flash.
Oh yeah, you were talking about that on the last show.
Actually, I'm also rather chuffed to get the tablet. I haven't gone into the tablet verse, and for some stuff, it may be very nice.
Yeah, tablets are fun, especially if you haven't tried one before. I mean, you don't seem to be big on the phones or playing with Android at all, so this would be a nice experience in that.
Well, in my use case, it's going to be a Wi-Fi device.
Right. I mean, my tablet's a Wi-Fi device. What type of tablet?
It's a ZTE 8.5-inch K88.
Evening, Joe.
Hey, what's up? I am working right now, so I don't know how talkative I will be during the show.
Okay.
Yes, I'm thinking seriously of dropping an SSD into it and calling it good.
That's always a good idea.
One of the things I'm looking at is, since I pretty much centered myself on Ubuntu LTS-based systems, I'm thinking of setting up some kind of app caching.
That's not a bad idea. Save your bandwidth.
Well, the gigabyte inside is going to be a lot better than whatever DSL gives me on the Wi-Fi.
Right.
The interesting thing I find with the tablet is it may actually become my portable machine. And the laptop, because of its power, becomes a more desktop replacement.
That makes sense. I mean, really, it all depends on what you're going to be doing when you're out and about, I guess. I mean, for when it comes to things like just surfing the web and checking emails, things like tablets and phones are excellent. I mean, it's not going to do any heavy lifting, but I mean, if for those things, it's fantastic.
Well, yes. And I'd put something on it like private internet access or something so that I don't, so that I have some armor going between me and through the Wi-Fi system.
Right. Now, do you use a lot of like outside internet sources, like I don't know, coffee shop, McDonald's, something like that?
I have used libraries, stuff like that, but most of the machines today are wired into the home network. And I don't have a functional laptop that is completely functional, keyboard and screen. One of them's got a good screen, one of them's got a dead screen and a good keyboard.
Isn't that always the way?
And I have an old XP class Celeron that I'm keeping basically because it's around and I can use it like a Raspberry Pi if I decide to. Well, I'm just saying it's a low power unit that I don't have to buy and I can plug into the net and run remotely.
Yep.
Even my old E machine would be okay if I could do a processor swap on it, but I haven't been able to find any AMD socket, AMD2 processors. They seem to have vanished.
Your board, it's the AM2, or is it the AM2 AM3?
AM2, absolute. AM2. This is a first generation Sempron 1250 LE. Like if I swapped it for the same generation Athlon, I would probably see a great improvement in performance, which is one reason why stuffing a server OS on it is not a bad idea. It's got a few fairly big disks on it, an SSD, and it just doesn't have the performance for desktop applications. But for the minimal type server work that I would do, it'll be okay. Honky, may I ask what kind of things you do with your tablet?
Surf the web, go on Amazon, occasionally check on email, and then usually things like Netflix or watching video. The best thing for it for me has been just basically watching video.
Well, I don't do too much video. However, it would allow me to enter the Kindle verse, which would be quite interesting.
Oh yeah, you could definitely read some stuff on
Yeah, I don't know if the Kindle format, well, if there are viewers for Linux.
What type of tablet is it?
XAT&T ZTE K88, 8.5 inch tall, 5 inch wide, basically the size of a half a sheet of paper.
Is that x86 or is that and Android?
I believe it's Snapdragon, Qualcomm Snapdragon 1.5 gigahertz.
Okay, so it's probably running Android.
Yes. The reason I asked about having the reader for Linux is to see how I would access material. If I copied it to a Linux machine and wanted to read it on that.
There is an application called Calibre that works pretty well for switching things to different formats.
Yeah, I've heard of Calibre. I just didn't know what is available on for the display side on under Linux. I'll be exploring that. Although I also wouldn't mind doing SSH from my lap to the computer across the room.
Yeah, but with that, I mean, the hardest part about that is that much typing with it. I mean, you could obviously get a Bluetooth keyboard and use that with it. But, I mean, trying to touch on the screen for that long of a time, I mean, it gets to be kind of a pain.
Well, some places where I go, there are particular libraries which they used to have hardwired network, but now everything's Wi-Fi. But they do have ample power capabilities. So Wi-Fi and Bluetooth running at the same time will not be too much of a problem.
Right, I see what you're saying. I'm just saying that if you're going to do something like that's very intense, typing intense like SSH, then you definitely want a Bluetooth keyboard.
Well, by the way, guys, there's a utility called UCare Core, which does your updates, purges, including kernels, more or less automatically once you run it. Yeah, it's called UCare System Core.
What does it do? It basically, when you do an update, it kind of it also cleans out all the old files and the old kernels.
It does the update. Then it checks to see what cruft is left, including old kernels.
I want to say that's just basically, I mean, I've heard, did you ever listen to any of the Podnut stuff with Door to Geek?
I used to. I don't follow the Potterverse as much as I used to.
Yeah. He has talked several times about basically he has like one long list command that, well, it's not a list command, but it's one long command that is, you know, it's the update, upgrade, and then the clean, and then there's something in there to clean out the kernel to it. But it's just basically one long command that you'd run on any, I think it'll work on probably any Debian-based system.
Well, that's what the UCare thing is. You run it, terminal window shows up, it says starting in 5 seconds, and it goes through and sweeps your machine. Also, I've just been introduced fairly comprehensively to Aptitude, and I like what I see.
I want to say I've heard somebody explain what the difference is at one point, but I don't remember what it is, the difference between just regular apt and aptitude. I want to say aptitude will actually give you a progress bar when it comes to some of this stuff, maybe? I may be wrong.
Apt is just, it's just all the different, aptitude stuff conglomerated together. So instead of doing what is it? An apt get and an apt I can't remember. Thinking about too much all at once. But the new apt is just a bunch of other tools put together.
Okay. I haven't tried it out yet just because I just kind of stick with what I know.
It still is the same stuff that you know. It's just, you know,
put together differently. Right.
What I like is it's smarter about dependencies. It's smarter about stuff like that. It's like an automatic transmission. It does the more shifting for me.
Sounds good to me.
And again, I'm a refugee from Windows 7, so I'm still learning a lot of the stuff you guys got done. Although I am interested in seeing, there's a YouTube video where they have Windows 10 running under GNOME boxes.
I don't think that should be too difficult, because it seems, from my very, very, very limited understanding of GNOME boxes, it just seems like any other virtualization software. So I don't know why it wouldn't work as well as anything else.
Well, what I like about GNOME boxes, I haven't used it, but I have used a lot of VirtualBox. And I like the GNOME boxes appears to not require patching your guest machines quite so much. Although I haven't, again, gotten any real experiences. Sometimes I'd like something a little lighter weight than VirtualBox.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that boxes also can act as a inter-system access point, I'm going to have to explore.
What is an inter-system access point?
Well, boxes will access virtual systems on your machine, and it will also reach out to other systems to run stuff.
Really?
Yeah, that's what makes it. And again, it's very Linux oriented, so that it uses I think it's a lot closer to the Linux machine than something that's got to be system agnostic like VirtualBox can be.
So is it running almost more like a container than it is like a virtual machine?
I don't have enough experience to know the difference, but what I'm saying is its hooks are you know, very much libvirt and stuff, close to close to Linux.
So I'm probably wrong. It's probably more like virtual machines, but they're just able to play nicer together, I guess. Because that's what, from my understanding of what you're saying.
Well, you know, Zen Center is great stuff, except the control client requires Windows.
Well, that's not nice.
So I think boxes is designed to sort of fill in there. You know, we're all Linux in together. Although it will run Windows, it will run even FreeDOS.
Even in 50?
Goodness, 50. I was wondering if I was going to have to change my NIC to 6150, which will be more applicable next Friday than this Friday. Yes, gentlemen, I'm getting another groove on my 3 score.
What? All right, I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to explain that last one to me.
Well, this Friday I'm 80. Or with the kind of wear and tear, or 80. And next Friday I will be 80 and one more.
Got it. I thought that's what you meant when, but just, yep.
He's turning old.
Got it.
Not only that, I've been doing most of the chatter, which is 51's job.
And I scared him away.
Jeez, I'm looking forward to his chatter myself. Mine is kind of low grade.
Hey, we've been going on for about an hour now.
Christy, mate, please speak up.
Speak up.
Either he's thumping
either
on the
he's
mic.
Thumping on the mic.
Or clapping.
Or clapping.
I can't tell.
I can't tell.
But I do hear me.
But I do hear me.
I think the mic works.
I think the mic works.
Seems he's having crossfeed issues.
Wonder if he can't hear us.
Do you guys hear me?
Yep. Do you hear us?
You're real low. I'm still messing with the phone.
How are you doing?
Your lips lit up, but we can't hear you.
How about now?
Sound good?
Okay, yeah, I'm still having headset difficulties. I'm going to have to buy a new one.
How's Blazing Hog been treating you?
Say again, I'm sorry?
How's Blazing Hog, your ISP, been treating you?
Actually, weird. Last couple of days, we've had high winds here in the Midwest, and couldn't get a good connection until this evening when they dropped off. I still need to go, you know, go outside, take the uplink with me and the antenna and find what's the best direction. I am not getting the speeds that were were promised.
Now, is there a way you can how would you test your signal strength on that?
Well, the modem has like, you know, bars like 1 through 6 or whatever, but I mean I get 5 out of 6 bars and still don't get any speed.
Now, did you say your neighbor had it as well?
Yeah, my neighbor said, you know, they were getting pretty much everything that was advertised. I just haven't hit. Probably I should make that a priority, but a lot of things have come up in the last few weeks. But yeah, I need to go outside, see what the best direction is, get back with them. They said, yeah, well, yeah, we'll get you your, you know, the full speed. It may cost you $500 in equipment, for a repeater, but we'll definitely get you your speed.
$500.
Yeah, I'm hoping it won't come to that. I mean, the other solution, other than the people I was already with, is go to. They also had a a wireless modem and go to them and say, hey, I've already got the modem. Just give me the SIM card. That's just me hoping it would work like that, or me going to them saying, hey, I've got the equipment, and if you want me to be a customer, you know, do it that way.
Right. Who was your old provider?
The old provider is SC Telecom.
Now, who do you use for mobile?
For my phone, I go through Walmart, which is oh shoot, what is the Walmart provider? Just a minute. Straight Talk.
Okay. Now, Straight Talk's they use the AT&T towers, don't they?
Actually, no, I don't think they use AT&T. They use oh shoot. I want to say they use Verizon.
Really?
See, one time before Straight Talk, I had Verizon, and I've told this story before. It was like, of course, when you first buy a phone, it until it gets paid off, that you have a higher price service per month. And I figured after 2.5 years I'd paid mine off, and in different markets it was like, yeah, if you paid your phone off, then it goes back to just the price for the service, not charging you for the phone. And oh, the phone I had was not Inspiron, whatever, but it was famous for after you had it for a certain number of months, it would fill up with data, and that then screw up. I looked that up, but yeah, it all of a sudden go bing and quit working, and I'd had that. And so I went back to Verizon, said first I'm gonna need a new phone, and second I figure I've been with you guys long enough paying the whole high price, never drop back. You guys owe me a phone for free. And they didn't agree with me on that, so that's why I dropped Verizon.
That's awesome. So, doing a quick search, Straight Talk is a type of carrier known as an MVNO, a mobile virtual network operator, which means that it doesn't run or own a wireless network. Instead, it purchases the right to use towers from AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint.
That sounds about right.
But that's basically everybody. So I'm wondering if they just pay to use certain towers off of everybody's network. And if that's true, then well, from my understanding, and I'm not very well versed in the mobile reverse here, but to be able to use the Verizon towers, you need a CDMA SIM card, and to use the AT&T, Sprint, or T-Mobile lines, you would need the GSM SIM card.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm CDMA on the phone.
What the Blazing Hog is a cell, isn't it? Oh, they're using the cell towers, right?
Yeah, and here I'm pretty sure they're on AT&T.
Okay.
And I don't know. I may have I might have gone better, talking to AT&T directly.
How much are you paying for this?
Well, like I said, it's about $100 a month right now, which, like I said, there, two or three things I put ahead of this, but probably I should have gone and made it a priority to get the best speed. But at least it's not, I don't have any length of contract, so if I call them up and say, hey, forget you guys, I can do that.
Man, that really stinks that you can't get like a cable out there.
Well, and anybody listening, will say, yeah, you can't get cable anyplace rural.
Now, could you get DSL like Netminer?
Maybe no, because you'd be within 5 miles of copper to get DSL. So no.
Now, what type of speeds are you getting on your cell phone? Is there a way you can do some tethering?
Well, that's what, you know, one of the things Street Talk, you know, I don't know how they'd know, but that's in the Street Talk contract, no tethering, even wired.
How is the service, though? I mean, could you, like, do something either through Street Talk or if you're using the CDMA, it's through Verizon for getting a hotspot or, you know, getting internet that way?
Well, I pretty much get 4G on the phone, but I looked at, you know, I looked at the Straight Talk and it's very, very much capped, you know, like 1 gig download a month on the Straight Talk. If you were to get their, you know, get their hotspot.
Right. I forgot about data limits. So they've in Blazing Hog is unlimited, right?
Right.
And if I was you, I'd find where the closest cable or fiber is, and then just start digging a trench, start running a line.
Funny you say that. Not where I am now, but the old place, it actually did run right past my house. I mean, apparently. They tied into the right away or whatever it is for the power lines, and the power lines were like, you know, wherever the edge of the road was plus 50 feet or something like that, and so they could they bought into that and could run right under it, you know, it was buried line. So, you know, I had the cable right, you know, literally right past the house, but, I asked him at one time years and years ago, you know, what would it cost to tie in? And they said, yeah, we'd have to build a station and it would be like $50,000.
And when you were living in town, you had the cable internet that way, didn't you?
Yeah, I had Cox Cable when I was in town for those few months.
Yeah, it sounds like it's time to talk to Upstream and see what they've got to say.
Yeah, just today. I don't know if I'll stick with it, but I did do the first week. Stars has been added to Hulu, so you know, I signed into that. Probably another service I don't need, but it gives me American Gods and the one where trying to think. The one where the woman from around World War II gets sent back to, you know, 200 years ago in Scotland.
Don't know that one, but it sounds awesome. Have you started watching American Gods yet?
No, I haven't. I just signed up for it today.
All right, because I read the book, and it was really good. And was shocked to see that they made it into a show.
Yeah, it looked really good. That's the trouble, you know. I will see a series and then, yeah, that looks nice, and it's no place I can get.
Right.
I mean, I haven't started in on it to get. What's the name of? Finally, the second season of the Marvel series where the guy has, you know, like almost unlimited superpowers, showed up on Hulu.
Is that The Gifted?
No, I've been watching that, but it does, you know, kind of beg the question, what happens when the Disney Channel has their streaming service and all these different Marvel, beyond Netflix, what happens to those series?
Well, I think their purchasing of Fox is going to take over some of that, isn't it? I mean, all of the mutant stuff, the Marvel mutant stuff, is owned by Fox, and the Hulu series. So Hulu, the part of Fox is a part owner of Hulu, so they get anything that's that. I want to say that Freeform is where Cloak and Dagger is on, and Freeform used to be known as ABC Family, or I think that's one of the company, another one of the companies that is actually owned by Disney, that they just kept changing the name of the channel. And then obviously they already own Agents of Shield. Is Agents of Shield still going?
Yeah, in fact, Agents of Shield probably will end, but it's that they're confirmed for two more seasons.
The last one was really good. I haven't seen or heard anything about there being a new season yet.
Oh yeah, they're confirmed for not one but two more seasons. The guy that played Coulson is coming back. Coulson is dead, but it's like evil Coulson or something. Yeah, the series I was thinking of was Legion.
That's it.
And I really liked that, but I think I'm waiting for, the regular season of everything to stop, and then I'll jump on that.
You following all the CW stuff?
Yeah, mainly the CW stuff is what I'm talking about. There's a few other things that I follow. I'm really enjoying Nathan Fillion in was The Rookie.
But after like the first season, isn't he no longer a rookie?
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess I'll have to change the name of this show.
I'll have to check that one out. Did you ever watch Castle? Was that any good?
Not regularly. I mean, the parts that I've seen, I liked, but for some reason, I never really got into watching the whole thing. Is, of course, it was funny. I think I actually saw the episode, but it's out there on YouTube. He dresses up for Halloween, and his daughter is like, "Yeah, the whole space cowboy thing is getting kind of old."
I'm gonna have to look for that. All right, so what do we think? It's 10:12. Do you think we should start the show now?
Well, I came in pretty late, but it's probably time again to start the show.
Okay.
And I did host last time.
I was just about to start.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net / tech show. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Blind Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like the gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.